Hello, and welcome to the...
I love dolphins!
Wait, was that a dolphin?
Wait a minute, hold on!
Wait, killer whales are dolphins?
Welcome to the Dolphin Pod.
Dolphin science?
Dolphin science!
Hello and welcome to the Dolphin Pod. I'm Justin Gregg, your host. I sat down today with Dolphin Communication Project Director Dr. Kathleen Dudzinski, as well as one of the research associates of the Dolphin Communication Project, Manon Temelin. Now, I don't know Manon particularly well. We've never actually met. So this was a great opportunity for me to get to know more about her and about the research that she's been conducting with Kathleen over the past few months and years. So here's my conversation with Manon and Kathleen, where I first asked Manon to tell us what she's all about.
So first of all, I'm French. I'm from France. I live near Paris, and I always been interested in marine mammals, dolphins, and more specifically, killer whale. So when I was younger, I wanted to be a killer whale trainer, and I tried to work my way toward that goal, and life happened. So basically, so after high school, I went to university and I studied biology. I have a bachelor degree in biology of population and organisms. And during that, the process to get that degree, I did a few internships at Nausicaa. It's an aquarium in North France, and they taught me everything I know about training. So I got to see what was training, and I had hands-on experience with animals. And then for my master degree, I did a master degree in ethology. And here again, I had to do internships, mandatory internships. So the first one was again with the Sea Lions at Nausicaa on superstitious behavior. Mm-hmm. And the last one to validate the degree was with DCP. So that's how I arrived at DCP in 2019. I was working at Maryland for July, August, and reading paper and learning more about dolphins. And I came up with her research paper. So I basically was trying to get an internship anywhere with marine mammals. And she answered positively. And so that's how I ended up with DCP. And I just stayed there. And I just keep working with her now.
That's great. So Kathleen, so what was it? Because I went through this process of introducing myself to Kathleen and trying to make myself interesting and get her to supervise me doing things. So what was it about Manon that drew you to her?
Well, I think it's the same thing that drew me to many of the students who still are with DCP, who I won't let go, like the two of you, is when you write a letter, you're clear, you're direct, it's something that I can read, I don't have to decipher. You present your ideas, it's a conversation, not something where I'm asked, what can I do? It's, hey, I want to do this. These are some of the ideas I have. I'd like to collaborate with you. And if we have space and an opening and it works out, I think that's the exciting thing, is that I have my degree. I don't need to go through the process again, but I'm more than happy to work with other individuals who are at that stage who want to go through the degree and who actually put the time in. I will freely give my time to those who want to work with us, but I don't want to do your work for you. So
great. Yeah, that makes sense. So yeah. Manon, you must have come in with a pretty clear idea of what you wanted to be looking at from DCP's with DCP's research. Is that right?
So yes and no, it was a bit more complicated because for my master's degree in France, I had to do a 5-month internship, and I had to arrive in September with where I was supposed to do this internship. So I had a deadline that was pretty bad for the marine mammals science, because usually everyone is in the field in July, June, in this period. So I didn't get many answers. I'm in the field. See you in September. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I was clear in what I needed, what the university needed. And I was, so I mentioned a few of her paper that were interesting. At the time was a picture of in contact paper.
Yeah.
And obviously didn't want it to repeat what has been done, but was open to any suggestion in what I would be able to do in 5 months, because that was the challenge. I had to do something in 5 months. So,
was that we had just learned about the relationship quality in corvids and chimps. And in chatting with Tomas and Bugnar, I don't know if I say his name correctly or not, and Orla Fraser, we thought this could be applied to dolphins, but I didn't have the time to do that. And so I mentioned one of the papers to you.
Yeah.
But that was the thing is,
when I read the paper, I could see how I could do it. And so since I was already seeing a bit of the process, we decided just to go with that and not looking for something else. I was already interested in this since I was going to work on different aspects of dolphin social lives. It was a kind of a complete field of view on dolphins. And it was very interesting.
And that's what I mean by I don't have to do all the work is I mentioned one of the papers and Mano found the several others that have been published and started fleshing out ideas and what could be looked at. And it was like, okay, well, this will work. We can make this work. So
I'd say that for grad students, that's sort of the key really is they shouldn't require a lot of hand holding. And so I can see how that's a super attractive quality if someone wants to run with something.
Right.
And so tell me then more about this thing that you decided to run with. So it's interesting. So you came in knowing you wanted to do something related to the pec fin work that Kathleen has been working on for a long time. And you came across these studies of chimpanzees and ravens with relationship quality. And I don't want to go too deep into it because there's literally a DCP deep dive video that I would encourage people to watch where you give a whole presentation on all of this. But give us the sort of overview of what was going on with ravens and chimpanzees that you thought might be applicable to dolphins.
So the thing is, I was familiar with the pec fin paper. And so when I read the, I think, I don't remember which one I read first, maybe the chimpanzee paper, I compared it to the raven paper and they were very similar because they use the same method. And based on the different behaviors they used, I could see which behavior in dolphins we could use to try to apply that method to chimpanzee to dolphins. And so we chatted about it and tried to figure out what else could we use and would we be able to do a full application of that method to dolphins. And so the first discussion were on that, what can we do? And yes, there was a pec fin paper. And now that we know that pectoral dolphin contact are used to strengthen social bonds in dolphins, and we needed those kind of interaction to compare with chimpanzee and raven, we decided to include those contact and specifically the rubbing contact to the method for dolphins. And then we looked for other behavior that could be similar to those used in chimpanzee and raven. And so we had a lot of discussion about that and how to find something that would be similar, even though it's not perfectly identical because they're dolphins, they live in an underwater environment, which is completely different than the terrestrial environment of raven and chimpanzee.
I think, Justin, to jump back for a little bit of context, for decades, the way researchers, human observers, have assessed relationships in other animals, especially social animals, is a coefficient of association, which basically looks at how much time two animals spend together versus apart or versus with other individuals. And as we know, that's looking at the amount of time two individuals spend together. But the amount of time two individuals spend together can be biased. So when we're in the field and we're in a field course with students, we're with them, you know, 12 hours of each day. Maybe that's a little underestimate because, you know, we're in their intensive field courses. But if an alien came and took a look at the 15 of us that are on that field course, they'd say, oh, they have a high association. They're together a lot. But the relationship that we have with those students who we just met is not as strong as, you know, the relationship I have with my husband or with my sister or with different friends. And so for me, looking at a coefficient of association on dolphins, where it's usually based on how much time they come together at the surface of the water, where they spend 5% of their lives, as opposed to underwater, where they spend all of their lives interacting, it just didn't feel right. But that's the only tool we had. And so when we saw what was going on with the relationship quality or RQ studies with chimps and ravens and several other primate species, it was like, wait a minute, this is looking at the actual interactions between animals to get an idea. Could we use those interactions and those behaviors? Could we identify behaviors that allowed us to assess the quality of that relationship that these individuals might have?
And it wasn't just one behavior. We could, right. We were able to take several behaviors that could be important, yeah, for dolphin social life. So pair swimming, object play, and contact, all of them together at once. So
yeah.
That was.
So this makes sense to me. So it's, the coefficients of association thing is a good issue, actually, because it's not just the amount of time they spend together, but it's what they're doing. And so the idea is you find behaviors that are meaningful to those social relationships, and you look at the individual behaviors. So that's a good way to do it. And then they had been done for ravens and chimpanzees. But so tell me then how you solve this problem, which was you have chimpanzees doing stuff that's important to chimpanzees, and it's probably things like grooming or sharing food, stuff that dolphins do not do. So you had to then come up with a list of behaviors for dolphins that was equivalent to the behaviors you saw in ravens and chimpanzees. So what did you then land on for the kinds of behaviors that would be meaningful for dolphin social interaction, which is just fundamentally alien to COVID, corvids and, you know, I keep saying the word COVID instead of corvid because of stupid COVID. Anyway, that's meaningful for a chimpanzee or meaningful for a corvid. So what behaviors are dolphins doing that matter to them?
So we, to do that comparison between the two species, the three species actually, we also went to the definition of each relationship component. There are three relationship quality component: value, security, and compatibility. And so specifically, my example would be on value. Value is defined as beneficial and beneficial for each partner in that relationship in a way it will impact their life or their survival and their fitness. And so for the grooming behavior in chimpanzee, which is a behavior that is important and has an impact on the individual's life, we tried to find something similar. But the thing is, when we first started, we were, maybe rubbing is a good compromise for that because of the action, not because of the why they were doing that. And it turned out after the whole study that our rubbing behavioral variable wasn't in value, it was in compatibility. And it totally makes sense to us afterwards when we were thinking about it, because yes, pectoral contact and rubbing are important for dolphins, but maybe they're not that important about for their survival, while actually grooming is a health issue also. Not only that, but it's also for their health that they do that behavior, which is completely different for pectoral contact, which is more, you're going to exchange more pectoral contact with people, with dolphins that you like, than dolphins that you don't like. So it was completely logical to have that one ended up in compatibility, which is the ease with which you're going to interact with another individual. And so we got some surprises in the process of trying to find similar behavior. But in the end, our surprises were quite logical and easily explained in the dolphins world. So no, it was pretty funny to do.
And one of the things, you know, as you talked about, both chimpanzees and ravens will share food, and dolphins, with very rare exception, don't share food. We do have some anecdotes of them doing that, but for other reasons. But we tried to come up with something that could be a proxy for that. And what we settled on was object play, because those would be objects that they would share, or that they would steal, or that they would We haven't really seen any giving, although, you know, that was a possibility in there. And that's where we would pull in that's where trying to find analogous actions, or in some cases, homologous actions between the species.
And now in the literature, when we read something about object play or play in general, we kind of know that there is a benefit somewhere, but even though we cannot really prove it right now, it's something difficult to do. So we assume that there was a real benefit for the individuals in playing. And since it was agreeing to share something, that's why we used it as a proxy for the food sharing.
That's fascinating. It's interesting to me because I know, Kathleen, when we've talked about and we've worked on pec fin stuff, we always equate it with grooming, right? Because they seem so very similar in their function. But you seem to have drilled down a bit further and been like, well, the function is maintaining social bonds in one sense, but because grooming in chimpanzees also has the function of parasite removal, which is a different additional function, they're not equivalent because dolphins aren't removing parasites. Its function is really social, which right. I hadn't really, and I don't think other dolphin people necessarily thought of it on those terms. So I find that to be a pretty useful contribution to the field. So well done for that. And you were talking about the things that that popped out as being different. And I think in the paper you talk about pair swim positioning. That is a thing that you spent a lot of time describing as being quite different between the populations of dolphins, because, correct me if I'm wrong, you were looking at two separate populations, the dolphins off of Bimini and then the ones at RIMS, the Roatan Institute for Marine Sciences?
Yep, exactly.
I'm always going to get acronyms wrong. Anyway, so those are two dolphin populations mostly acting exactly the same way most of the time, except for pair swim positioning. So what on earth is that all about?
So, as a side note, the RQ paper ended up turning into a whole pair swim position study right now.
Oh.
So we are studying pair swim position in dolphins because of that paper.
Yay, science.
It's fine, yeah.
So basically, so we already know based on previous study that the RIMS population and the Bimini population are very similar. But the thing is, for the RQ paper, we had a very small sample size. Again, because I had to do it in 5 months, so I couldn't go through a lot of data. But we're adding more right now.
But also, sorry to jump in.
Yep.
But she, for a method paper, she went through a large number of data. I mean, you know, Justin, when you go through video, it's a lot of data. Uh-huh. And so the samples that she had for this paper, it was more than enough to confirm that this method worked. And now it's just adding more and more details as well. Yeah.
And so for the two population, the thing with the pair swimming variable is we looked at all different type of pair swim because the sample size was so small, we couldn't focus on one pair swim. And also we didn't know on which one to focus at that time.
And just to clarify for the listeners, a pair swimming means different dolphins with different sex and different sort of age classifications swimming with each other. Those are the pair differences you're talking about?
So pair swimming, our definition is two dolphins swimming in particular position related to one another. So they're just together in specific position. The best example would be the infant position with usually the mom swimming above the calf, with the calf just under the genital area of the mom. But we observed many different kind of pair swimming position. So for example, we had the infant position, but we also had the parallel position. When you have two individuals swimming on the same plan, none of them is leading and they're just less than a body length of each other when they're swimming. And we had a stacked position. So one dolphin on top of the other, neither of them leading, but they just swim like this on top of each other. And echelon. Two echelon position. So like basically for the mom and calf usually, but we've seen it also with other type of individuals. So one dolphin on the flank near the dolphin from the other dolphin. And
yeah, I'm using my hands to show you because I can see you right now. Of course, that doesn't translate acoustically.
Yeah, it's an audio medium. That's true. But yes, so but there are images that you can find online of these different positions. So if you start Googling dolphin swim positions, you'll probably end up with perfect descriptions of echelon and mother calf. And
yes, yeah. Yes.
But the interesting thing is Minot did an extensive literature search, and the echelon and infant have only been looked at energetically or socially for moms and calves. Those positions are assumed by older individuals of the same age or of different ages, of both sexes or different sexes, but they haven't been looked at all in the literature.
And there is also other breastfeeding position.
Yeah,
and
several others
hasn't been done either.
That's interesting. Yeah. Is that just because we sort of have our bias of like, oh, this is the common mother calf one. So if we see it in other another pair, like two adult males, we just forget it. Like, it doesn't fit our preconceived notion of what they should be doing, so we don't describe it.
It might also be the result of surface observation.
Yeah, versus underwater.
Versus underwater, because we see much more of what's going on since we're doing recording underwater. Yeah. And from the surface, you don't really... Like, for example, we have a staggered parallel, and an event. So basically those three positions, you have two dolphins parallel to each other, but then it's just a matter of one of them is leading or one of them is leading above the other. And from the surface, it's hard to differentiate those three positions.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So you would, I guess if you're on a boat and you're looking down, you saw a large dolphin and a small dolphin, you'd be like, oh, mother calf, and they're sort of next to each other. So you would assume a mother calf position. But you can't tell for sure. And if you saw two adults, you just assume they're parallel. But because you are underwater looking at video, you can say, oh, you know exactly the position that they're in.
Pretty model.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah. And so you found a difference? Is that what the paper
For the relationship quality paper. So we had rims and bimini. And so the first difference is the number of pair swim observed. All type of breastfeeding taken together were different between both sites. For example, we had almost 70% of pair swimming in bimini and only 40% at rims, which is a big difference, but also could be a result of our sample size because the bimini population is not as easy as the rims population to observe because we have to go out and look for the dolphins. And so for the bimini, I had to use four sessions in 2 years. So I used 2 months in 2016 and 2 months in 2017 to match the sample set that we had for rims.
In 1 hour.
Yeah, exactly. In 1 hour.
So it also might be a result of that sampling. And then we used all different kind of pair swimming position. And so looking at each population, we realized, well, there was a lot of infant position at rims, but less in bimini. But then in bimini, we had a lot of parallel position and less in rims. So each population were using the position differently. And we weren't looking at age or sex at that time.
Okay.
And so now that we're working on pair swimming position in more detail, we know that male-male dyad, female-female dyad, and male-female dyad will use pair swimming position differently, just sex-related. But then also adult with adult, juveniles with juveniles, or adult with juveniles will use different type of pair swimming position. So that there might be also a bias in our data set with those related to those category for each pair swimming position.
But sorry, I'm going to jump in before you say anything, is what's interesting is the difference that was found overall between bimini and rims suggested, okay, something's going on here. So the pair swim overall, when everything was summed for the RQ, fell out in different components for rims versus bimini. I don't remember. I just know they're different.
Yeah.
But what that suggested when we started looking at possible reasons why for the to explain this in the RQ paper, we started seeing, okay, well, pair swim positions haven't been looked at in anything except moms and calves, and for these two positions only. And as we started looking at the data, as Manoh dove deeper into pair swim position, there seems to be a social difference in those positions based on age and sex and how those positions are used. So we wanted to increase the sample size to look specifically at that. And the more, you know, we had this idea and then we went into the field. And as we look at things and we watch what's going on, we can see before we run stats, so we have to confirm it with the statistics, but we can see that there are differences in how these positions are assumed. And oftentimes in the data, in the video data, we don't see the animals enter into those positions. So right now we're not necessarily looking at who initiates placement of a pair swim, but when they're in that pair swim, you know, when, how often are they in there, who's in there, and what are they doing? Because socially, there does seem to be a difference in how those positions are used.
So at this early-ish stage, what is your sort of leading hypothesis as to why? What's the difference? What's causing the differences in who's swimming with who and why in what position?
So it could be difference based on sex. For example, we saw a lot of infant position between adult female and adult male. And regardless of position, like mom or calf position assumed by each of these sex, we just see a lot of infant position between those male and female, but we don't see much of the other position. So it could, there could be something related to reproduction and sexual behavior.
Courtship may be an indication that they're ready or
so that's interested. Interesting. So that, so, but you, so you see that position a lot in males and females, but you don't see that there's one, the male is more likely to be on the top position or the,
so
that's not
that's
part
the
of
thing
it?
That we couldn't test okay. with the sample we had at the time for RQ, but it's something we're going to look at with the whole data set because we're adding data right now from 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020, and maybe more. If we have time, because mm-hmm. yeah. it's time consuming. So we'll be able to answer that question. But for the data set we had for that study, we didn't have enough to see a pattern there. Right. And we might also see some individual preferences related to positioning in each of these different pair swimming positions. So we're going to add more and maybe came up with something a bit clearer and defined as related to roles. But then, for example, so that was a male-female adult together. But for example, if we focus on only adult male together, the graph we have is we see all position. Hmm. There, none of them seems to be more observed than the other one. We just see all different kind of position between adult males. And
but it might be different for younger males.
Yes. Mm-hmm. When we focus on juvenile, depending if it's just female together or male together, we see differences on which position they're going to use more. And then if you look at the overall, all kind of dyad, all kind of sex, we see a lot of infant position everywhere, except for this male-male adult-adult dyad, because they just do everything and none of them is higher than the other. Hmm. So there's something interesting going on there.
Well, yes, it suggests that the swimming positions are not random, because that seems to be true. Therefore, these positions that the different sexes and the different age groups are taking are meaningful to dolphins. And that's what's interesting, I think, for people listening, which is when two dolphins are swimming in a position, it's not just random. It means something to them in a social context. But we don't know what it is, which is what you two are trying to figure out.
We're working on the social hypothesis, but we hope to be able to also work on the hydrodynamic hypothesis. Mm. So when they use those positions, they're not thinking of, I'm going to do that because I'm going to save energy. I'm pretty sure they're just going to do it without thinking of those benefits. But it might also be one of the explanations to take into account. So we're going to try to look at both.
And part of that is because echelon position and the infant position was looked at for hydrodynamics. So the hypothesis there that was shown to have support was that calves will swim up near the mom's dorsal fin, which is considered echelon, when they're younger. So, you know, they blend in with the mom. So that's a camouflage, but also they don't have to, you know, kick as often as, you know, they're newborn. They can ride in mom's slipstream, if you will. And then when the calf is about a month old, it starts to shift down to spending more time in the infant position down near the genitals. And that's also where the mom's mammary glands are. And so it will again be camouflage, blend in with the mom's body, but be right there near where the milk is and where they can swim next to mom. And so those positions have been looked at for energetics. They have been looked at for the benefits of being able to swim next to mom. And that was one of the things we talked about is, you know, there are social benefits. Well, are there hydrodynamic benefits for one dolphin to swim in that position compared to another one, depending on age and sex? And we don't know. Nobody's looked at that.
We know there is benefit for the calf.
Yeah.
Are those benefits still there when it comes to two adults together? Not sure, because two adults' body instead of one adult and a calf body.
Sure, but it's an interesting idea that if indeed the benefits of the slipstream, we'll just call it that for ease of use, for two adults is similar or the same to a calf, that means if you're in the slipstream, you're expending less energy. And so the slipstream as a concept might exist in the dolphin's social world and therefore be part of the way they express the nature of their relationship. Because if you allow another dolphin into your slipstream or vice versa, that could be a meaningful signal to the other dolphin about where they stand with each other, maybe in a courtship context, or maybe just a friendship context. So that's kind of what you're trying to figure out, if that's even a thing, and how they actually use it. That's pretty exciting because that's not been done before.
Yeah, no. We're having fun with the pair swimming position.
I bet. Yeah. And so that then leads me to ask you, where have you been recently? You say you're working on collecting data and studying more. Are you out in the field now doing actual data collection yourself, Manon, in some terrible location?
So we just got back from 4 weeks in Raritan with the Rheims dolphin.
Terrible. So, it must have been terrible.
Yeah. 4 weeks with the dolphin in Raritan. But it was... slightly, it was a bit hot for me, but perfect for her. So
I loved it.
Kathleen is tolerant of heat. You're from the north of France. It's not always warm there, whereas Kathleen seems to just...
more temperate.
Yeah. Kathleen, you thrive in places that make other people sad and sweaty and angry.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah.
I don't hold it against them. You know, I just thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've seen you in snowy conditions. It's not your favorite.
No. I've actually, a couple colleagues have called me ectothermic, and they might not be wrong.
It's weird because I'm a skinny dude, and you're pretty skinny, and I always complain. I'm like, I'm too skinny for the cold. I should be in warm temperatures. But as soon as I go to someplace warm, I'm like, I hate this, and I have to go back to the cold. Whereas you seem to be the body type that is correctly designed for it.
The warm. Yeah. I get cold. I have to pile on more and more layers, and so it becomes difficult to walk. So
or swim,
I'm done with dry suits. I'm sorry, it's very, very difficult to snorkel in a dry suit.
Yeah,
it just doesn't work.
Yeah, no, I understand. So you have to be in warm waters, or you're going to be miserable.
Yeah,
and so Manal, you were there suffering these past 4 weeks. How was it in terms of both? Like, did you enjoy it, and was it useful in terms of data collection?
Oh, we got a lot. We were able to get in every morning. So we managed to have station between 20 minutes and 30 minutes long, almost every morning. And we had nice weather. We just got poured on the first day, and that was it, which was good for the student, because we don't care, but the student kind of care a bit. we got to collect a lot of data related to that we will be able to use for pair swimming, relationship quality, and other kind of research that we're doing. And we were able to collect other type of data, and the student helped a lot with that, because we had two student group on 3 weeks, and they did a good job.
Yeah, and then a short eco tour. So these were the first 3 weeks were a field course where the students come with DCP to learn about the research that we do and to help collect the data. And the May, June time period, there's very, very, very little breeze. So the sea was glassy, flat, calm. Hmm. But that means that at 5:30 in the morning, when we start everything, it's
so many times we had to write no wind
and in very hot
condition. So it was hot.
So hats, sunglasses, you know, water bottles. That I was in the water, so it didn't bother me.
No, of course it didn't bother you.
You're the one suffering on the platform.
Yeah,
that's right. Under a big sun hat.
But it was really neat to see, because now as we see the patterns in the data, as we analyze and we look through, when we go and collect the data, it's like, oh, did you see this and this and this? And we can actually begin to point out some of the paraswim positions and some of the other behaviors to the students who the water is clear enough. We had really good visibility that you can see it from the surface. You can look in and see the animals swimming and get a sense of what we're talking about and then review the video. So it was very cool.
And I'll say that is the beauty of what you're doing in this kind of science, which is you've been studying dolphins for decades at this point, looking at video data, pulling out things that you're studying in terms of communication and sociality that you think might be meaningful to dolphins that isn't immediately obvious to the human observer. And then once you identify that thing, you go back in the water and then you see it everywhere because your brain is now tuned into it. And so as a person who's observed dolphins for so long, you are noticing a lot of things happening in a dolphin's world that a regular everyday person could never possibly know. And that is because you've built up a wealth of knowledge over the years, finding things in their behavior that have always been there that have just not been clear. And you can only do that through good science and statistics, as it were.
And long-term observations.
Yes.
And actually talking to, like, chatting with the students who might have ideas, but talking to colleagues who might look at this from a different perspective, you know, conversations with you and with other folks at DCP as well, because we'll start to, like, I believe there is mentoring from adult males to younger males. And it's come about by watching the males at RIMS, where we have years. The adult males in there now, we saw as calves in 2003. So we're seeing this and we're seeing some of the details. But as yet, I don't have a way to document those interactions to be able to ask that question scientifically. Mm-hmm. So there are certain, and this is, you know, looking at paraswim, it's like, oh, this is how it came out. It's like, okay, we have these observations. And that, to me, that's the scientific process, is you make observations that spur questions. And it's like, okay, well, now how can we collect the data to actually do the statistics? Because that's what makes it rigorous, is to be able to repeat things and to observe it and say, aha, that's what we got.
Yeah.
Crystal got that comment.
It's a beautiful process, but it is slow. You can't just sit behind your desk and come up with an idea and then go look for data and boom, you've got it. You have to, it's a process where you're feeding back, like you're making new questions as new data comes out from observation. It's beautiful. And speaking of the future of it, Manon, what are you going to be doing in the future? Because now you're working on a whole new project, working with paraswimming and positions. And that sounds like the kind of thing you could turn into a PhD or whatever, or a few other master's degrees. Like, what is your goal for yourself and your life? At least papers. Yeah. What are you up to?
It's going to turn out in a couple of papers first. Mm-hmm. Still following on the rest. But we're going to try to find more answer on that. And I'm pretty sure, well, actually, we're looking at person position among two dolphins. But we already know that we see triads in pair swimming. So the next step will be trying to find a way to analyze those triads and explain those. So there's still work to do. And then we have so many parallel projects that takes also a lot of time. So now it's all about finding time to do a bit of everything at once. And it's a bit challenging sometimes.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, there's a danger that this is going to go the way of Shark Bay, you know, when you started with alliances and then you went into super alliances. Suddenly, you're just going to be blossoming into this insane territory of trying to keep track of all these swimming positions between...
Yep.
Oh, gosh, that'll keep you busy for the next 30 years.
Well, the triad is pretty cool because it's a triple infant position.
Yeah.
Triple infant position. Like, how is that stacked up? Like,
we had a triple echelon too.
Like, yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So basically you have, a mom, a calf, and another female.
Oh, so they're stacked up like above, yeah, above, exactly. Above. But do you also have one? I should know this. Do you have one where there's one dolphin and then you have two in infant position on either side, like double?
So we have parallel infant position.
Parallel.
We've had clients doing parallel position.
Yeah. Right. And actually, with Bailey, I saw Cammy and Gizmo, but also with Ellie, Cammy and Gizmo. And the Cammy and Gizmo are younger dolphins there. And Gizmo is with Ellie. Cammy's with Polly. So yeah. It was interesting to see them. But what's also cool is, are the calves initiating that? Or does mom need a break and say, here, take the kid?
I know. Once you start talking about who's initiating it, forget it. You've just like exponentially increased the amount of questions and data you need. Oh, wow. That is a lot of work for everybody. But fun. And produce a lot of papers and a lot of new discoveries, because a lot of the things you're talking about are brand new discoveries, which I think is the most exciting thing of doing this kind of work. And again, it doesn't just come out of nowhere. It comes out of hard work and time. Which you've obviously put in, because congratulations on the RQ paper and the and this new one coming out, hopefully, pair swimming.
Hopefully.
Yeah, is there anything you wished I had asked you about your life, career, or something you've studied that I haven't done yet, something you wish people would know about you or about the research?
No, right now I'm pretty happy with the pair swimming position things, and I'm pretty happy we got to speak about that one, because it's a very interesting aspect of what we're doing right now.
Yes, and it's cutting edge, people, because it hasn't been published yet, sort of, other than your mention in the RQ paper. So so if you heard it here first.
That's right.
Cool.
That's right.
All right. Well,
and we'll have to do a repeat like next year and see where we are. On it.
If you have some results on it.
That's true, because it all could be nonsense. Like, you start looking at the data and you're like, oh no, none of this was actually a thing after all. But that's also a discovery. Yeah, I mean, that's a discovery. So, okay, well, I will thank you both for joining the Dolphin Pod. And anything we need to mention, Kathleen, about maybe students, potential students for RIMS for the programs coming up, or other DCP events?
We do have an eco tour in October that still has some spaces to join us down at RIMS, which would be cool. The next field courses, we're actually done with field courses for 2023. Hard to believe, but we start again in 2024 with those. You can contact DCP for information about those and the schools that we're doing them with. And we will have some new product this summer.
We're working on it.
Yeah, we're working on some new stuff to make available. People can become dolphin protectors and maybe travel in style with DCP. You know, we'll have announcements about that in early July.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you for joining. This has been a lot of fun, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the Dolphin Pod.
Sounds good. Thank you.
The Dolphin Pod is a science podcast covering all aspects of dolphin science. From news stories to new research, interviews with dolphin experts, and fun and crazy dolphin facts. It's brought to you by the Dolphin Communication Project, a nonprofit research and education organization whose mission is to promote the scientific study of dolphins and inspire their conservation. Learn more by visiting dolphincommunicationproject.org. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Please get in touch with the Dolphin Communication Project through Twitter or our Facebook page. If you've got questions or ideas for a future episode, let us know.